was mad. It was bad. It was all up in your face. For 365 days, it was 2010, and we journeyed through it to bring you the best and worst of cinema. And now it's time to take a look back in the oneliner.com's podcast review of 2010.
Yay!
What? <Woot, woot.
laughs> It would have sounded better if you managed to maintain that the whole way through.
Ah, never mind. It's always good to fall flat on your arse at the end. Flat on my arse. I don't know if you get planning permission to build a flat on my arse, but yeah, man. So 2010 was like full of films and stuff. As per usual with these things, we've got a list of films we liked, a list of films we didn't like, and a list of films that maybe attacked us from out of the left field with like blunt implements, but in a good way because we enjoyed them. So without further ado, Scott, perhaps you could tell us about something that you enjoyed from last year.
Hello.
Oh yeah, I didn't introduce you. Yeah, Drew and Scott are here.
Hello.
Hello.
You guessed that already. Sorry,
mate. One thing, just before we kick off into the past few years, we've tried various ways to go up with some kind of definitive list of the best films, whether it's either individual or coming together with some kind of gestalt amalgam of all of our opinions. It's never really worked.
No.
In part because we've not watched the same films all year, and how on earth do you sort of properly judge if something like a romantic comedy is better than a drama? The criteria for judging these kind of things are always sort of two completely separate things. It doesn't make a lot of sense to say
ordering these things doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
No. So after spending like weeks moving things around last year, we decided to just simply not bother. This is just going to be a list of some of the stuff that we really liked, some of the stuff that we disliked, and some of the stuff that we think is worthy of mention for one reason or another. With all that out of the way, I'll start with something that I suspect, if we were doing it the old-fashioned way, would probably be the number one position. We'll start with the obvious one, for me at least, is Inception.
Yes!
Christopher Nolan's fabulous science fiction memory mashup. I just found this tremendously enjoyable all the way throughout. It's just visually tremendously inventive. I don't think it's quite as complicated as a lot of people seem to be. Well, people that didn't like it seem to call it too complicated, and I don't quite understand where that's coming from.
But that's because people are idiots.
Yeah,
yes.
I thought it was all very well explained. I thought it's obviously fairly stylized and fairly layered, for want of a better term. But it explains all of that very well. I never felt that was lost at any point in it. I
think
it was
theoretically
really clear.
Most people should be able to keep up with it, so long as those that need to keep taking the Ritalin.
See, what I liked about it was it's very dense, but it's set up so well and is explained in a useful but not clunky exposition scene early on, quite how it works and the different levels of the people's mind, that you're able to follow all the way through, provided you paid attention. And if you didn't pay attention, then why weren't you? It's your problem, not the filmmaker's.
It's built on a deceptively simple set of rules that actually, if you've got a modicum of common sense, you'll go, oh, right, then, okay, and then you can sit back and say, you know, for the next 2 hours and 20 minutes, you can go, yep, that works, that works, that works, that works. It exists and works entirely well within its own plot logic, and it can't really be faulted.
No, it's truly excellent. It's just everything about it just seems spot on. Like, you can follow it as long as you pay attention, and the film merits that. You follow what's happening, understand the difference in time, etc. It's got a great cast, great performances from everybody. It looks fantastic. The pacing's spot on. The special effects are fantastic. It's nigh on perfect.
I would say it's by far and away the best sort of intelligent, huge budget film that's ever been made. But then you have to also consider that I don't think another big budget intelligent movie has ever been made. So I think this is actually genuine new unbroken ground in that for the first time ever, Christopher Nolan has said, do you know what? Let's spend the amount of money we would normally throw at a dumb shoot 'em up, something like Terminator 3 or something like that.
Avatar.
Yeah, exactly. But let's actually spend it on people who want to go to the cinema and, you know, they would like something with the they would like something with the narrative quality of an indie film, but with the big budget eye candy and cast of a summer blockbuster. And thank you very much, Christopher Nolan. I, for one, am massively appreciative of that.
Yes, you've decided to consider that your audience may have some intelligence and to treat them with respect, which is quite pleasing. And I think that actually quite a lot of the people who said they were confused and didn't like it probably need a slap.
Mm.
And it's their own fault for deciding, oh, I'm not going to apply any thought to this, possibly because that's what they used to from such big budget blockbusters.
Mm.
But it's their own fault. No, how about just once you engage your brain just a bit?
Yeah.
And you'll get an awful lot more out of it, because I think a lot of the time when you get that sort of thing, isn't because the person's dumb, it's more ignorance and refusing to actually use their head.
Yeah.
What I find interesting about this is, right, almost every year, right, you can find someone who will take what is generally regarded as being one of the best films of the year and say, this is the worst film of the year.
Mm.
And I've seen people say, oh, Inception, what a terrible, terrible film, worst film of the year. But there's normally something that you can latch on to and say, well, I didn't like it because of this. Anytime I've seen someone say that this year, it's been, I didn't like it because, neener, neener, neener.
Yeah.
There's no rationale behind it.
I don't like it because I simply wanted to go against the grain.
Yeah, because I'm trying to be a fucking hipster. That is the only reason you can think for not, that's the only valid criticism of it, yeah, that I found.
I don't do mass market, all right.
It's not to your tastes, fine, but you can't really claim that it is the worst film ever because of any particular thing. It's just because you don't like it that much.
Mm.
Which that is fine. Is. But you don't normally need to like the same thing, but that's just being petulant. There's nothing wrong with the film, you just didn't like it. And I think this is a fantastic film and enjoyed it wholeheartedly.
Yeah. I've seen this 4 times now, and I've enjoyed it each time pretty much just as much as the first time that I saw it, but in a different way each time as well. It's definitely one of those films that rewards repeat viewing. You can watch it the first time and sort of go, oh wow, that was pretty far out. I haven't seen anything like that before. I'm pretty sure that if I go back though, I'm going to be able to pick fault with it. So the second time you go back, you watch it, and you're studying it, you're enjoying it, because there's a hell of a lot to enjoy it, but you're studying it to see at which point it trips up, and there's one of those moments where you can sort of put your finger on and say, ah, see, now that doesn't work. But then you get to the closing credits, and you're like, oh, there wasn't one. So you go back and watch it a third time again, and you can sort of sit back and just relax and enjoy it, fully understanding it, sort of without having to think all that much this time, because you know what's going on, and it still works. And I've watched it another time since then as well. And it still works, and it's still enjoyable. And I can't think of the last time I enjoyed a film that much.
So it's safe to say we like it?
Yay! Christopher Nolan's a smart man, and at some point, I mean, it's inevitable, his run of amazing films is going to come to a halt. But there's a couple of things that I think he deserves, if we take 2 minutes. I think he deserves a huge pat on the back for being a man who still wants to keep the physical effects industry on the go. He understands that, you know, there is still a great deal of craftsmanship involved in physical effects, and that these people shouldn't just be dumped by the wayside. If he can do something without CG, he will do it. Even if it costs twice as much, he will do it, because he understands that the state of play at the moment is that you can still spot a CG effect from a physical effect in the massive deal of cases. And he understands that in an action film, it has to be about, so everything has to have a kinetic, physical presence on the screen, and the only way to do that in a lot of circumstances is just to stick with physical effects. And do you know what, if it costs twice as much to do it physically, if you want to build a corridor, a whole corridor on a rotating gimbal with a camera system, with a free floating camera system, then do you know what, yeah, that's going to cost a lot of money, but it's going to work a lot better, and it's going to be a lot more convincing than trying to do it in CG.
You're going to get far better results, even if it weren't just how it looked, although it looks better. Simply because the actors have something physical to actually interact with. I mean, obviously acting, partly a large part to do with imagining things, but if you've got an actual physical space and know your surroundings and can see exactly what you're manipulating, it's going to be all the more believable, isn't it?
The other thing as well is that Christopher Nolan, again, he's a smart man. He appreciates the visual splendour of the format, which is IMAX. He's very much committed to making films in IMAX before he'll make films in 3D. He hasn't ruled out 3D. He's gone on record to say, do you know what? I really like IMAX, but if it turns out that the audience give me feedback that suggests they would actually prefer stuff in 3D, fair enough, I'll start working in 3D. But in the meantime, he's sticking to his guns and he's saying, this is what works best for me. And so far, the audience has been smart enough to reward him. I haven't heard anyone say they would have liked to have seen Inception in 3D, and I haven't seen it in IMAX, but the people who I know who have seen it in IMAX have said it's absolutely fantastic, and he did the same thing with The Dark Knight as well. So let me tell you something, Christopher Nolan is a man to be respected, because oddly enough, because he's shown me a bit of respect. So thank you, Christopher Nolan.
Yes,
I reciprocate. Yeah, we liked Inception. Someone table something else.
I suspect the two of us, Craig, would agree with Scott that if we had to pick one film above any others, it would be Inception.
Hmm.
But it wouldn't be by much over another couple of films. And it's because there are a number of films I had on my list that were just so good, but different in a way that you couldn't legitimately argue one was better than the other. I would just pick one at random from that list. It would have been just by an Inception in our list. Get Low, which is a fantastic character piece with absolute powerhouse performance from Robert Duvall, superb support from Bill Murray, Sissy Spacek and others. And it's just a fantastic film that is more about character than appearance, as with Inception. And if you haven't seen it, I hate you.
Well, you hate me then.
I hate you, yes, but that's for other reasons. Just for a quick recap, for those who aren't familiar with it, is a story of this old guy who knows he's going to be dead quite soon and wants to sort of set things to rights and find out what people have been saying about him, having become the centrepiece of all the crazy old man jokes of the small town in which he lives in the American West.
Yep, fabulous film. The film of the Edinburgh Festival for me. I don't know how wide a release this got. Nothing like as wide as it deserved, I will warrant. Tremendous ensemble casting. It's a minimalist film, I suppose, in the sense that there's really not an awful lot happening in the film, but the characters in it are so deep and feel so real and are so well portrayed that...
The characters are... It's amongst... Especially, you might expect like the central character, Robert Duvall, to be really deeply written, really well-rounded, but everybody seems to have real depth. There aren't any characters that don't have some depth to them. There's no two-dimensional characters in this at all, and that's a very unusual thing.
Yeah, I'm just looking through. I haven't really investigated all that deeply before, other than just knowing that I love it. The director behind it was mainly a cinematographer beforehand, and that shows.
Yeah, it's his first feature-length film, isn't it?
Very well sort of shot film, very lovely film, but for basically his first real film as a director, astonishing. Absolutely astonishing.
Absolutely.
Because you've got so fantastic performances from everyone. It's so well balanced. It just feels so real and so... It's just a fantastic movie. Go and watch it. I don't know what it's doing at 7.4 on IMDb, but that's IMDb for you.
Yes.
If you can at all find this film, get a hold of it, do so. It's fantastic. It's a lovely film. I absolutely enjoyed it to the nth degree. This is partly why I decided not to try and rank this in a kind of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 format, because I don't know how I'd be able to pick between Get Low and Inception. It is that good.
It comes down to as well as, how could you actually argue that this film's better than that film, simply because they're two different films, they're both very good. Why would you want to? Why not just say, this film's excellent, this film's excellent. I can't imagine there are many people in the world whose time's so limited they could only choose one to ever watch. So why not just watch
exactly.
both of them?
Why not? I'm going to try and catch up with Get Low then, because I hadn't actually heard of it until you guys mentioned it tonight, so...
You've not been listening to our EIFF podcast, you bastard.
Oh, well, no, I must have done then.
Anything you'd like to mention?
There is, yes, being as it's actually one of the few films I got a chance to get out and see at the cinema this year. Toy Story 3, rounding off the trilogy quite nicely, and bizarrely placing CG... a kid's CG trilogy in the pantheon of greatest series of films of all time.
Can't argue with that.
No, 3 out of 3, well done. I think a lot of people have said this is an even better film still than Toy Story 2, which I don't think I would agree with, but that's not to say it's not a good film, because sat next to anything else that I've seen this year, it's the next best thing I've seen to Inception, probably, and you can imagine what state my eyes were in at the end.
Yes.
not going on prior performance or anything like that, but what another fantastic turn from Pixar, who at this point, well, I was going to say they've yet to make a bad film, but that's very much my opinion versus everyone else's on a couple in their back catalogue. But the Toy Story trilogy, what a fantastic way to end it, and I can entirely understand why grown men in particular were being quite emotional at the end of it, according to a great number of press reports.
I think Toy Story 3 was one of the first things floated when Disney bought Pixar. Mm. And it's one I've dreaded ever since.
Yeah.
This is another case of Disney just not being able to leave well enough alone. Mm. They're going to mess it up. It'll be typical of any of their straight-to-DVD or straight-to-video releases. And I really was very, very worried about quite how, well, awful this was going to be. I expected that. And I've probably never been happier to be proven wrong, because it's fantastic. Whether or not it's better than Toy Story 2, I think it comes down to a case again of, I'm not sure I could give any coherent, worthy argument of why one film is better than the other. I think they're both fantastic. Yeah. And this is, it's funny, but it's touching. It's got deep characters that we already love. It's affecting. It's an excellent, excellent film. I think Pixar get too much credit. I mean, I probably agree they've never made a bad film, but that does not mean that all the films are good.
Mm.
But this one certainly is. This is up there with some of the best animation ever made. And if you haven't seen it, then you really ought to.
I'm very glad that John Lasseter's in the position he's in at Disney now as well, because I think, like you say, this was floated pretty early on in the buyout talks as part of the deal that you will make a Toy Story 3. But I think that they have quite sensibly brought the series to a very definite conclusion. And thanks to Lasseter's implementation of this no cheap, you know, spin-off straight to video titles that would cheapen and sully the reputation, we're not going to see any sort of, oh, look, the toys' next adventure with the new owner sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they've done what needed to be done, which we've brought this to a close now, and we're going to leave it just as this. I really hope they don't go back. I don't see how they could. Let's just keep it this perfect little gem.
Yeah, I don't think they will. I mean, I can't quite remember, going back a bit too much from my brain, but isn't this one of the ones that Disney kind of had some rights to it in the first place, and they had planned to do the Toy Story TV series spin-off, and then when Pixar merged / took over Disney, they basically immediately canned that idea because it would have been disastrous. Yeah. And so I can't see them going back and making another one, because obviously they care very deeply about Toy Story. It is what brought them to the dance in a great many ways, and this is as good a film as I've seen from Pixar. I'm not the world's biggest Pixar fan, but I absolutely loved Toy Story 3. I would say it's the best purely because, for a personal level, it was the most affecting. I think I was one of the teary-eyed people in the movie, just because the whole idea of sort of saying goodbye to childhood is, especially for a boy and his toys, is so affecting, that moment where you're like, oh, well, I'm just going to not play with all that stuff anymore and sort of put it in the box and get rid of it. And that's you. Now I'm thinking about taxes and mortgages and that kind of thing, and this sort of kind of brings that all back to the fore. It's very emotional, and that aside, it's tremendously funny.
Yeah.
It's full of character. It's beautiful. It's just a fantastic film.
I was a mess twice during this film. In Toy Story 2, I was a mess once. In Toy Story 3, there were 2 points where I was an absolute mess, and I suppose that alone tells you something.
I'll assume the junkyard.
Yeah, oh, Jesus. One of them.
So what was the other?
Well, the end.
Just the scene with passing the child, on the toys.
Yeah. The girl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The furnace, the furnace scene.
Yeah,
I was
furnace
absolutely...
The junkyard, I don't think actually I was feeling particularly affected by it, but that scene at the end with the little girl, was it Bonnie or something was her name?
Yeah.
Yeah, that scene actually had me going a bit. I think that's the one I'd particularly warned you about.
I suspect that there are a great number of people involved in the Toy Story, who have control over the Toy Story franchise, who care about it enough to probably prefer taking a bullet to allowing another Toy Story film to be made, because they themselves appreciate that they've reached a conclusion now, and it's a done deal, it's a finished item, it can't be improved on, you only risk, you know,
damaging the legacy.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, you're only going to Crystal Skull the rest of the franchise if you try.
Exactly. So,
I mean, I'm still worried about Toy Story 3 and the fact that Cars was one of the Pixar films I liked least, actually, but it's going to be Cars 2 shortly.
Yeah.
But when Disney had bought Pixar, it was really partly an acquisition of talent, because they bought Pixar, but the head of Pixar became the head of all Disney Animation.
Yeah.
And John Lasseter said, well, basically, you know what would be quite good, Disney? Stop raping your own legacy and making silly, shitty TV series of your own stuff, or terrible things like Aladdin 2, The Return of Jafar.
the Return of Jafar. There's a huge patch in Disney's history there where it's the biggest fudge of a legacy I've ever witnessed. For a company to have had such iconic status and then to have gotten into such a panic over foreign animation, particularly Japanese animation, and the response to it being this churning out of absolute pack. I can't think of a single one of Disney's, I mean, I haven't really seen any, but I can't think of any of their straight-to-video titles that have had any kind of acclaim whatsoever. And it was such a cynical cashing in on the fact that they'd created, in that period, they'd still created some really, really good films, but then to absolutely pull the rug out from under it, it's one of the biggest acts of suicide I've ever witnessed in my puff.
The Disney Channel was the death knell for traditional animation. Yeah. And it's only now it's been, well, certainly in the West, and it's only lately been kind of somewhat rehabilitated. Mm. But the need to churn out content, regardless of quality, killed Disney. And this is the kind of pre-Pixar Disney. They just had this need to fill so many hours of scheduling with all the stuff that they're just coming out with. And it's baffling that you almost wish for the crazy racist Walt Disney to be back in charge, because I'm sure at some point you would have said, this just isn't what we're about. There's a certain level of quality which we can't go.
Been spinning.
His little cryogenic head must have been spinning.
I was going to say, he must have been spinning super fluidly in his cryogenic tube. But I strongly suspect that if the Pixar involvement hadn't taken place then, that I don't think we'd be looking at Disney Animation Studios in, you know, it would not be the entity it is now. It would be unrecognisable from it is now, if still in existence at all.
How bad was Disney's reputation before Pixar sort of came and kind of rehabilitated
open
them?
Season?
And how much goodwill did Disney as a brand have?
Mm.
They were childhood for most people. You know?
Yeah.
It's baffling to think that they could have fallen so far and so quickly.
I know.
Baffling.
Absolutely
all
baffling.
Over now, so that's good.
Exactly, yeah, they're back on foot. Toy Story 3, like I said, I wasn't necessarily cock-a-hoop about watching it because I think I had the same reservations that you guys did, but I'm very glad that I watched it, and what a fantastic way to round off the trilogy.
Just in case we get too praiseworthy of Disney, though, can we please remember they are responsible for Miley Cyrus? Disney still have a lot of crimes to answer for, as far as I'm concerned, but recent Pixar output, not one of them.
Yeah, no, exactly. Scott, throw something else into the blender, man.
Another one that would be a strong contender for Film of the Year for me would be The Social Network. It is, just characterising it as the Facebook movie, as we discussed fairly recently, is really not fair at all. It is, well, I mean, if you were looking at it in terms of it being a documentary or an approach to the setting up of the Facebook sites, then it really isn't. But what you do get is a fantastically well-written and just so sharply scripted character drama that it's well worth watching regardless of what you think about either the truth of the matter behind it or your opinions on Facebook or any of the characters involved. And certainly the writers behind it, when you see the interviews with they've given, they're plainly not exactly unbiased sources for the film, but it's a fantastic work of drama. There's some tremendous acting performances all round. The directorial style is fabulous all the way throughout. There's just so sharply written that it's, you know, cutting is the word that was invented for this film, I think. Brilliantly written, brilliantly acted, and again, massively enjoyable, and, you know, what for me, one of the films of the year.
Oh, absolutely. I certainly couldn't disagree with that. It's fantastic. The fact that it's to do with Facebook is an irrelevance, really.
Mm.
It could have been about anything. It could have been about an entirely fictional company. I think perhaps Facebook's just useful in as much as people go, I use Facebook, I've heard of Facebook, and it might get them in to see it, which is fantastic, because it's a film that deserves to be seen. I don't have anything much to add to what Scott said. It's just, it's Aaron Sorkin's script is fantastic and acidic and acerbic and brilliant. And more importantly, Jesse Eisenberg's delivery of that script is just spot on and really quite remarkably accomplished for somebody as young as he is. And Fincher, he seems to have always dropped the particularly stylistic look of earlier films like Seven and Fight Club, just seems to be getting better and better.
I think Fincher's definitely growing up. You could definitely make valid, much as I enjoyed his earlier work, there was a lot of style there, and sometimes it didn't quite have the substance to back that up, but he's been toning that down since then. He's retaining the same kind of assured hand that he's had through all the way throughout, and this is sort of really, it's coming to fruition. I thought Zodiac was a lot better than a lot of people seem to kind of write it off as.
I quite enjoyed it.
Yeah, I really enjoyed Zodiac. I think we both thought that, haven't seen it when we saw it at the cinema too, Scott.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of other people, perhaps legitimately, simply because the film doesn't come to a particular conclusion, but and because they'd been expecting perhaps a Fight Club or Panic Room style stylistic piece from Fincher, were perhaps taken aback by it. It's quite different, but he's decided that to focus more on the substance, and it's really paying off, and it seems to have come to its climax so far in The Social Network.
Well, for me, Panic Room was a pretty much his lesser work, to be honest with you, and I was quite disappointed by it. Zodiac, I thought, was an absolute return to form. And I'm actually really, obviously I haven't seen The Social Network, but I'm really looking forward to watching it.
And I'll just reiterate what Drew said, because I think it's worth repeating. Jesse Eisenberg, fantastic. Of all the young actors kicking about today, I think Jesse Eisenberg's the one that's going to last the course. He's been brilliant in most of the things I've seen of his. It's always quite easy to get him confused with Michael Cera. But But I think Cena's kind of running his course, whereas Eisenberg's definitely got the chops to keep going. It's such an assured performance.
If you think back to him, I mean, he's so young, but he has been around quite a while, because I think the first time I remember seeing him would probably be the same time either of you saw him, was Roger Dodger, and that would have been about 8 years ago, I think. And he was pretty accomplished in that, and he was about 15 at the time, I think, instead of playing a 50-year-old, and I think he was playing to his age at the time. And he's really come on. I mean, he was in a couple of the best, wouldn't be the word, but certainly towards the better end of things last year, a couple of films, Adventureland and Zombieland, and he seems to be propelling himself skywards.
Well, whereas Michael Cera seems to have, obviously, people are getting a bit tired of his sort of, I don't know what you would call it, hipster nerd shtick, his sort of kookiness and whatnot. Eisenberg has spread himself around a little bit. He's played roles in a lot of different films now, and he's proven that he's entirely capable in all of them. He's almost always one of, if not the best thing in any of the films that he's in, and he's worked in a couple of different genres now, whereas Sarah seems to be sticking to that one particular type of role, and I think that's why you're probably entirely right that 10 years from now we might look back and say, oh, do you remember Michael Cera? Whereas I think we'll probably still be watching Jesse Eisenberg and stuff then.
Also, how annoying is it that Justin Timberlake is actually quite good in this film as well. And he's also actually quite funny when he does comedy, and he's also pretty decent when he's on his own singing. It's just annoying that someone who I feel almost primed to hate is so good at pretty much everything he's trying to do.
What a son of a bitch.
How depressing. God, I hate that Timberlake fella. He's so good.
Timberlake! I cannot control him! I don't know why I was trying. Forget I said that.
Right.
Drew, name another log you've brought for the fire.
Well, I think we're going to have to make the very obvious segue from backstabbing future billionaires starting internet companies to suicide bombers.
Yay!
Obviously.
Go suicide bombers. They've had a bad press lately.
Running marathons in silly costumes, no less. certainly another of my films of the year is Chris Morrissey's excellent Four Lions, which has foolishly and ignorantly been criticised for making fun of, say, religion or things like that. But it's not. It's making fun of the idiots who decide that blowing themselves up's a good idea.
Mm.
It's not about religion. It's about cultural differences and daft people who think that it's a good thing for them to blow themselves up and kill other people. And it's not certainly the most obvious topic for a comedy, but if anybody's going to make a comedy out of an unusual topic, then Chris Morris would be the man. And he's done a fantastic job of it. It's really funny, but thought-provoking as well. Absurd, yet with a real grain of reality to base it around. And it's very good. I'm not sure what else to say about it, other than you should catch up and perhaps set your preconceptions about what a film about suicide bombers would be aside, and view it with an open mind and remember that it's not about religion, it's not an anti-Islamic film or anything like that, it's simply about the bombers and their perhaps misguided notions of what's a good thing to do.
Yeah, it's a fantastic farce. There appears to be a few people that kind of got thrown for a loop, as they seem to be expecting this to be some kind of documentary or in some way real. I'm not quite sure where they got that idea from. It's plainly absurd, as is the whole point of suicide bombing.
Surely,
that is the point of it.
They must have got the idea that it was a real documentary from the poster, Scott, with the crow with the time bomb on it.
I'm pretty sure Chris Morris designed that poster, but it's the same one I'm looking at here, so I think from the US release. But it, What is fantastic about this is it shows the one thing that matters in a comedy that actually the people behind this must have understood. They've quoted the word funny 15 times from 15 different reviews. Yeah, so you should be no doubt this is a comedy, not a documentary, and it is tremendously funny. I was predisposed to liking this anyway, because if you named a single British comedy, certainly at least in television in the last 10 years, that I genuinely loved, there's a better than evens chance that Chris Morris would have been involved in it in some way or another.
Yeah, if it wasn't him, it'd be Aaron Mandel Iannucci, and the two of them would more or less cover everything.
Yeah, it is well written, it's well observed, it's very funny, it's definitely worth a look. What more can you say about a comedy? It is funny. Go and see it.
Yeah, go and see it now. I haven't caught up with Four Lions yet, disgracefully. They say anything the man Morris touches seems to turn to gold. It must be to do with the surname, eh, Scott?
Absolutely.
And I'm almost ashamed that I haven't found time to... Well, it's not that I haven't even found time. I'm just a lazy, lazy man. I can't even click a button that says download without some sort of encouragement. Yeah, I haven't caught up with Four Lines yet, but it's definitely in my top five list of catchy-uppies. I try to think, what else did I see this year we discussed earlier? Inception, Toy Story, and there was something else that I could mention. Scott, throw another shrimp on the Barbie.
Well, I suppose we can roll these two up into one, given that we were just talking about Michael Cera just there. Youth in Revolt and Scott Pilgrim versus the World. There's similarities between the two, mainly because both have Cera in it and he's both doing pretty much the same kind of character in it, but both I thought were tremendously entertaining. Youth in Revolt's just a very funny little farce, with Cera sort of taking on both his kind of usual character and kind of playing against type, being the exact opposite of his character in a kind of split personality kind of deal. Found it very amusing all the way throughout, and definitely recommended. Scott Pilgrim vs. the World is a different kettle of fish entirely. We discussed at some point in the past, it's obviously very stylized, but again, I found it very entertaining. I'm not quite sure where the audience for that lies. You've got to have a fairly strong appreciation, I think, of relatively obscure retro gaming classics, so it's kind of deliberately limiting its audience a little bit, but I found that tremendously entertaining as well. Perhaps all of its time it's going to date quite badly, but yeah. I quite enjoyed both of those. So
I would have put it on my disappointments list, if only because once you've had fun picking out all the gaming references, I didn't think there was all that much left. But I know I'm in the minority with that in this crowd. But
no, go ahead. That's all I'm really going to say about those two.
I don't want to be sort of picking anything to be down on just now, because we're going through the sort of good ones. But I just...
Oh, no, but if you disagree with it, it's entirely legitimate you say now.
We're
talking about stuff that's good. It's like, well, we might think it's good and somebody else disagrees. That's fine, because...
Well, yes, I know that's fine, but I just, for the sake of structure. But no, I mean, I've covered it enough in the podcast anyway, my feelings on it, that I was actually... I think it's kind of... It's poorly paced, it's poorly structured. I think there's far too many... The shtick of the Evil X battles goes on for far too long. It could have probably been half an hour shorter and just as entertaining. But yeah, once you get over the visual appeal of it, and like you say, for those of us who actually have the background to pick out sort of obscure gaming references and stuff, yeah, I don't know what else there is there. I don't think it's actually that great a film underneath, but...
Yeah, and I can't argue with that. It's entirely accurate to say that, but I just quite enjoyed it.
Yeah.
It's a kind of film that I don't actually care that there's that much underneath it. It's the sort of film that is throwaway entertainment. That's why I liked it. Anyway, we're tying back into what we're saying, that it's Michael Cera doing the Michael Cera shtick again. This is surely the last year he can get away with doing this without changing something up, because it is getting a bit tired now. But for me, at least, I found those two films still pretty funny and enjoyable all the way throughout, so I like them.
Yeah, I haven't seen Scott Pilgrim yet, but I very, very much enjoyed Youth in Revolt. I think the problem with Michael Cera is something we've discussed before in relation to Simon Pegg as well, because for the most part, Simon Pegg in his films is Simon Pegg.
Yeah.
And it seems to be the same with Michael Cera, and I suppose it depends on whether you like it or not.
Except when he's Scotty.
Yes, indeed. I think the issue here comes down to whether you like that or not. And as with Simon Pegg, I like Michael Cera's shtick. It's possibly coming old, but it certainly shouldn't put you off seeing the film, because it's very funny.
It's
a comedy. What more do you want from that?
I will always be interested to hear what someone has to say about it, because it's one of those films that has pretty heavily split opinion, and for that reason alone, I think it's quite interesting. And I certainly wouldn't say it's not a terrible film, but yeah, I didn't enjoy it as much as some other people did, but yeah, it's provoked a bit of debate, and that's a good thing. as long as it's constructive and it's not just people saying, it was shit. No, it was good. You're an idiot. No, you're an idiot.
But one of the other things I like about Youth in Revolt is if you search for it on IMDb, the first of the approximate batches is a film that is also known as Delegation of Temporary Revolutionary Government of South Vietnam in Yugoslavia. I don't know what that is, but I want to see it.
Yeah, man.
I thought it sounds horrible, like propaganda.
Propaganda? What?
Oh, again, nah. Drew, anything else you want to stick
in here? I have a few. I shall certainly plump for the one that my eyes happen to be staring at right at the moment, which is Ponyo. Which I think actually was originally released in most countries 2009, but didn't come out in the cinema here till February 2010. So it certainly makes it into our podcast. Once again, it's just showing that the Japanese and particularly Hayao Miyazaki's Studio Ghibli are the masters at both hand-drawn animation and just capturing the magic of childhood. It's just the most charming, magical, delightful film I've seen in ages. It's beautifully drawn, it's got a really interesting story, the characterization is brilliant, and I really can't find fault with it at all, other than that it ought to be more widely known. Everybody should have had a chance to see this in a film, a cinema, not in a film, that would make any sense.
Since when did you worry about making sense?
Yes. It disappoints me that it got such a limited release, but it's just so magical. It's really quite innocent, probably almost wholly innocent. There are some ecological themes in there, but done with such craft without being in a heavy-handed way that far lesser filmmakers would have done it in. And it's just an absolute joy. It's that joy, really. I can't think of a better word to describe how you feel watching it.
Yeah, Ponyo is absolutely fantastic. It is. You don't like using. I don't like throwing the terms like magical around, but it is quite fitting
magical.
For this film. It does feel like it's just a wonderful, innocent exploration of youth and this kind of thing. It's almost tempting to write off as the kind of usual Miyazaki stick of just being fantastic and capturing the kind of the joy of youth better than anyone ever has. It's right up there with the best that he's ever done, and definitely worth a look in if you've not seen it already.
Yeah, go Miyazaki. No, that's, you know, Studio Ghibli are at the stage where Disney should have been at this point in time without having to make some sort of crazy comeback. I think the last thing I caught up with actually was, believe it or not, was Howl's Moving Castle. What have I missed in the interim?
Ponyo and Tales of Earthsea, certainly. I think it may just be those two.
Yeah, but I thoroughly enjoyed Howl's Moving Castle. There's no reason for me not to have watched Ponyo other than I've gone off my animation tip for a bit at the moment, but I shall certainly enjoy at some point in the future catching up with them again.
Well, I suppose one anime legend to the other, Mamoru Oshii's Skycrawlers, one of the more sedately based films of the year, especially for an anime. It's one of these strange films where almost nothing happens, and Oshii's always had a kind of ponderous approach to this kind of thing. Basically a tale of a strange it's not a Cold War, because it's definitely a shooting war, but with somewhat strange overtones of cloning and all sorts of other kind of strange things going on. It's a wonderful film. It's just absolutely beautiful in a way that certainly few animes have really been. It's a tremendous film. Again, definitely well worth looking into if you've not seen it already.
Yeah, I very much enjoyed The Skycrawlers. It had a few too many flaws to make it into my absolute top-notch sort of grouping of films of last year. It was certainly interesting. Although in the same way I can see why people wouldn't like it, and I thought perhaps it was slightly too slow and you had to fill in too much of the plot yourself, which I was able to do, and you can do if you pay attention to the background information. I think perhaps for a lot of people there's just a bit too much work you have to do on your own. And this isn't in a way of saying these people are stupid and they're not really thinking about it. There's perhaps just a bit too much for just a fairly average person to want to do, perhaps.
An awful lot of the narrative is implied.
Which makes it kind of hard to follow. And this isn't a case of people just refusing to engage their brain. It's real work to put some of it together. But it's certainly interesting. If you like anime, I would certainly suggest that it's, again, there's not all that much of it makes it to this country. And this is one of the ones that has done certainly is worthy of your time.
Bong.
Yes, another of my top films of the year is one where very much the central performance has been the real key. While there's been important and good support from his other character players in it, but Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll, a biopic of Ian Dury and the Blockheads, played mentally by the Evergreen Andy Serkis, one of those completely insane method actors who decided that instead of just having perhaps some CGI like Gary Sinise had done Forrest Gump to make his leg look withered or damaged, decided, no, no, what I'll do, I'll just not use my left leg for 3 months for the two scenes that you really see it in. That mentalness aside, though, it's a very interesting film. Serkis's performance is captivating. Good support from the likes of Bill Milner is excellent. Andy Serkis, it's a powerhouse performance from him. It's an interesting time in British music. It was a very interesting band. The guy may have been a complete asshat, but it doesn't make it any less enjoyable to watch. And if you have even the vaguest interest in Ian Dury, then it's definitely worth a watch.
Wholeheartedly agree. Can't really add anything to that. Definitely worth a look in. I will throw in two films that I think are probably old news, certainly if anyone was listening to this in America. This year was the first time we got our eyes on Crazy Heart, which is, again, same kind of argument as Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll. Powerhouse central performance from Jeff Bridges. Best thing he's done in years. Great acting performance from that. That alone makes it well worth a look. But it's a great tale of redemption for a country singer. Arguably a bit by the numbers, but definitely a great film. I very much enjoyed that. One other thing I'll throw into that is The Road, which I think might have been last year for a lot of other people. I'm not sure about that. But again, that's again, perhaps old news, but again, just an affecting central performance and a hell of a story from this doomed apocalypse. It's in no way a happy film to watch. It's not family-friendly entertainment, as most films with gangs of cannibals aren't. But very accomplished filmmaking, and again, a very good film. Definitely, if you've not seen that, give that a look in.
I very much enjoyed both of those films, particularly The Road. It didn't quite make my absolute top echelon for the year. Perhaps simply because it's so unremittingly bleak, but mostly because had a few problems with the structure. Some of the flashbacks to the time Charlize Theron's characters in it seemed a bit unnecessary. There were a few too many of those, but otherwise, yeah, very affecting. Definitely not a date movie. It's not a happy film at all in any way, shape or form, but Viggo Mortensen's performance is superb. Crazy Heart, yeah. Yeah, probably the best Jeff Bridges's been in a while. I hope he's quite as good in True Grit, which I hope to see soon. It's, it's very enjoyable. For myself, another film that I got a lot about this year, Up in the Air, with George Clooney being as charming and as good a performance as you typically expect from him, surprisingly matched very well by the young Anna Kendrick, who's decided that she would decide to act rather than being in a Twilight films all the time. And it's worked out surprisingly well. Useful small performances in it too from the likes of J.K. Simmons and Zach Galifianakis, as well as Jason Bateman, make it a very watchable and affecting film, even if for once Danny McBride being in it didn't actually add anything to it. So that's certainly one I'd recommend.
Yeah, that's another one that's been on my list since, January? Best film of the year? Certainly not, but I found a lot to enjoy in Kick-Ass. It is essentially just another dumb comedy. At points, quite bafflingly violent, but very, very enjoyable. How that got a 15, I do not know.
It's very entertaining. It's massively inappropriate, which appeals to me hugely. Although in a sort of entertaining, massively inappropriate way, as opposed to, say, The Architect, which is in a German, massively inappropriate way. And it's nice to see that Nick Cage can A, remember to act, and B, actually bother to turn up for a comic book film, despite having been attached to everyone for the last 130 years or whatever.
You know what? Here's something that I've not put on the list, but now it comes to mind. Nick Cage in Bad Lieutenant.
Yeah, genius. Actually.
Absolute genius.
That came from nowhere for me.
That's one of a number of films there, Scott, that I've got not in my absolute best of the year, but sort of in the category below.
Yeah, it's in a blind side of the year, I think.
Yeah, and it's in there not so much for the film as a whole, which doesn't work 100% well, but for a particular performance. So Nick Cage in Bad Lieutenant, Old Mad Died in Stary, Third Star with Benedict Cumberbatch and a great ensemble cast. Another film that didn't quite make my top list, but I think it's worth a mention just now, is The Illusionist, a deeply melancholy film, but beautifully animated, the charm of hand-drawn animation, pleasingly set in Scotland, which makes it a nice novelty, and really quite affecting, really rather good.
Yeah, I mean, if we're going to throw out some of the bubbling unders, I think I've taken care of most of my best-of lists. I caught up with Winter's Bone just the other day, and I'm not quite far enough away from it to really judge if that's actually going to be a film of the year, but I really did enjoy that quite a lot. It's very bleak, but it's a great central performance again, and I think that would at least deserve discussion in the top films of the year. I think that's a strong contender. I'd certainly recommend anyone look at that if they haven't already. A few others that we'll just kind of throw out as sort of ones that I really liked was Restrepo, which is a war film, which was set in Afghanistan, very bleak. The Secret in Their Eyes, again, perhaps old news. I think that won the Oscar last year for Best Foreign Language Film, but it really does deserve it. It's a very good film. I thought How to Train Your Dragon in 3D was quite enjoyable.
And that's up there for me too.
Again, may not make the exact list, but very good.
I enjoyed it immensely.
Have I mentioned Invictus? I don't think I have yet. Matt Damon, again, some tremendous performances. I didn't think I'd enjoy a film about rugby, given that I don't like rugby. But again, this worked very well. That hit all the boxes, everything it needed to be, quite inspiring. One film that we spoke about this time last year that apparently was released somewhere in a cinema in Britain this year, so it allows me to talk about it again, is Mary and Max, which I'm going to keep plugging because I think it's one of the best films I've seen in the last decade.
Yeah, it's superb, absolutely superb.
A charming little claymation thing. If you want to go back last year and hear about what we had said this time last year and any of the last year's Edinburgh Film Festival podcasts, give that a look, but it's definitely well worth a look.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just throw out a few more here. Let's condense all the Stieg Larsson, Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, and the other two ones that are out by this point in their original language versions. They're very, very good for the most part. It's kind of perhaps diminishing returns as the series goes on, but definitely looking well worth catching up with at least the first one before the Hollywood remake appears. I liked Wall Street 2, even if a lot of people didn't, and I can understand why they didn't. In the dumb but enjoyable category, let's put Red and Machete.
Yeah, Red's certainly there for me too, Scott. It's just silly, it's over the top, it is dumb, but it's one of those films you just watch with a massive grin in your face for the most of it.
I suppose Daybreakers as well. It's been a while since it's been a kind of vaguely inventive vampire film, and this was certainly one of them and quite enjoyable.
And most decidedly not Twilight.
Yes. I'm not sure if this quite fits the bill of a horror film, but The Disappearance of Alice Creed.
Yeah, that's up there for me too. It's a thriller, I think, and notable particularly for being very minimal, that there's very small amount of sound design. It's a very Spartan set, and there are only three people in it, but the performances are excellent, and it's probably worth watching simply for the amount of acting Eddie Marson can do with his eyes alone.
Definitely recommended. What else have we got down here? Another Matt Damon film, Green Zone.
Green Zone's up there for me. Pretty intelligent thriller.
Not his best of late, I'd say, but definitely very enjoyable. Well worth a look. Cemetery Junction. I'm not sure if that makes the list for you, but it's at least a pretty decent film.
It was sort of in sort of middling for me. It was a decent watch, but nothing like Film of the Year or anything like that.
No. But I'd say it's worth digging out, especially if you like sort of Ricky Gervais's shtick. And the last one that had a kind of relatively widespread release that I suspect anyone could possibly look at would be The Town, which was...
The Town's another... It's a decent thriller.
Yeah.
And it's just Ben Affleck's skill as a director just being polished that bit more. Yep, I've got most of them in my sort of bubbling under category, as you put it, Scott. Invictus, as you mentioned, which... On the face of it, and so if you were to encapsulate it, it's a relatively bog-standard sort of sporting underdog story with a wee bit of political interest in it and a bit of Nelson Mandela there. Yeah, the main point of with a wee bit of Nelson is, while it's on the face of it a sporting underdog story, it's just a particularly well-crafted, particularly well-acted one, which sets it apart and makes it worth a watch, even if you weren't interested in the actual event of the 1995 Rugby World Cup. Green Zone, as you mentioned. A couple that you had mentioned, Scott, that were quite high up for me. One is, I'm going to mention it because I enjoyed it, but I suspect it didn't get a particularly big release. We saw it at this film festival called, a film called Obsolidia, which, again, not without its flaws, it gets a wee bit preachy ecologically towards the end, but beautifully shot film. And, well, in fact, it looks so nice, it's probably worth seeing, but it's quite interesting, really good centre performances, that's worth a look if you can get a hold of it anywhere. And the other film, which is partly up here in my list simply because it surprised me, but partly because it is actually really rather enjoyable, is Buried, which is a good film with Ryan Reynolds in it, which is good enough reason because it's such a rare thing. But for someone whose acting we have, I think, legitimately panned in the past, it's a film with only him on screen for the entire time, set in a coffin, so very limited amount that he can actually do, and it's really very, very effective and a really pretty solid thriller.
It's one, I mean, I haven't seen it, but I'm sure it's one of those films where for someone, you know, someone whose career's taken the trajectory that Ryan Reynolds has, I'm sure he's pretty happy with the money and the fame and the adulation, but I can imagine this being the sort of film that reminded Ryan himself, oh yeah, this is why I started acting.
Yeah.
Because you've got to think, from all that I've heard, he's proven himself quite a worthy actor in this. Now, if he's capable of that kind of a performance, then if that's him really enjoying his job, the past 5 years must have been a bit of a slog for him, actually.
Yeah.
That's mostly what I've got. So perhaps I would just mention one or two more briefly. Prince of Persia, which I finally got caught up with just a couple of weeks ago.
It's not bad, is it?
Yeah.
It should be terrible, but it's not bad.
It's a fairly enjoyable film in its own right, but I particularly mention it simply because it's a film based on a video game that's any good at all, let alone very good. It's a film based on a video game that doesn't massively suck, which is quite a feat, really, and certainly very much goes against the trend.
I'll jump in. I had a little trilogy of Obscuria, one of which was Obsidia, which we spoke about earlier, just there. Great film. The other one at the festival that I thought was great was Snowman's Land, which I don't think Drew saw, but...
Which I didn't see, no.
A strange little kind of hitman drama in the middle of the wilds of nowhere, which turned out to be very enjoyable indeed. And one I think we both saw was Fish Story, a Japanese story, which was just bafflingly strange, but worked far better than I had any right to.
Yeah, that didn't quite make my list that we're, the level we're on now. It was Kevin, if I had to give a rating, it was on a 3-star film out of 5. Certainly interesting, though. I'm not quite sure if I remember this one, but I remember particularly enjoying She's Out of My League, which is by no means a film of the year, but the fact that it was a romantic comedy that I actually really enjoyed as opposed to thinking it was terrible, the fact that Julia Roberts and Katherine Heigl knew or near it was probably something to do with it. But again, a very likeable performance, as in How to Train Your Dragon by Jay Baruchel.
Yeah.
Who I'm always happy to see.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not a bad film. I thought, I think if memory serves, that started off kind of weakly, but picked up quite considerably towards the end.
That sounds about right.
Quite enjoyable. I think that's a fairly reasonable list. For a while during this year, when I was thinking about films, I thought this may be one of the lesser years for film in the last little while. But when I was actually putting this kind of list together, there's a lot of pretty good films there. This year does not embarrass itself, and it's probably been better in the last couple of years.
I don't know. I think the last few years have probably been better than when we started doing these podcasts. Mm. We had a couple really awful years, and I think they've been better. I mean, I'm just looking at I've got my list broken down over the years, trying to keep a track of just to keep a guide. I've got them broken down under like number of stars, like 5 to 1 or 0, and I've got like 10 or so in my 5-star thing, and the ones were all mentioned earlier. And I've got really quite a large chunk, maybe 20 or so, that I've rated 4-star, a decent number 3-star, and a large chunk, unsurprisingly, sort of a mediocre 2-star, and not that many that I've considered really awful. And when I started putting it together, I thought, oh, there weren't that many that stood out. But no, I mean, I think the majority of films I've seen, I would consider at least all right. You know, I would rate, say, a 3 out of 5, if that was a useful guide to you, and that more of them were in that than below that sort of level.
Yeah, I've perhaps been a little more discerning in what I've went to see this year, as time constraints and all these other things that have come into play, but there's been an awful lot of pretty good films this year, and I can't complain about that in the slightest. Well done, Hollywood and other respective film producing places.
Well done this year.
Yes.
Last year.
Well done, world.
Yeah, last year. In fear of this becoming far too epic a podcast and wanting to get to my bed tonight because I'm working the Mora, have we covered our likes?
Yes.
I think we've pretty comfortably covered our likes, yes, unless there's anything you particularly want to mention.
I wanted to add to that, but is there anything that's caused outright offence to you guys this year?
Enter the Void.
I knew you were going to say that, obviously. Yeah.
Well, we just discussed that literally 2 hours ago as we were recording this, yeah. So I'm not going to go into it again. If you want to listen to the last podcast, I didn't like Enter the Void in the slightest.
Yes.
Yes, I certainly have a couple. Cherry Tree Lane for basically being the Daily Mail incarnate, which I really didn't like. The Bounty Hunter for being a complete non-rom-com. See, Clash of the Titans for A, having Sam Worthington in it, B, being directed by Lou Leterrier and therefore being awful, and C, being shot in shitty pop-up Buco Vision 3D.
I think it's worth mentioning, that was extra specially dreadful.
It was.
It was a bad film that was made worse, and that's saying something.
Why Sam Worthington keeps being cast in things, I've no idea, though, because I mean, he's so wooden, I think an actual tree would do a better job than he does. Another couple, just I want to mention, perhaps more than a Cigarette Girl, which I don't think anybody else is ever going to see, but I saw it at the film festival, which was just entirely without merit, although, pleasingly, just conventionally shit. As opposed to, say, pretentiously shit like Antichrist or something. And Cop Out, the first Kevin Smith film I've ever seen that I actually thought was utterly awful. And just a complete waste of Bruce Willis. It was just spectacularly unfunny and a complete waste of everybody's time.
I haven't been witness to anything that's particularly offended me this year, I have to say. I would add to Scott's smackdown of Enter the Void that I didn't really hate it. I just don't care about it one way or another. I think to hate it is to invest in it far too strong an emotion, and certainly more emotional involvement than it deserves. I've taken a New Year's resolution this year to not swear so much, so I will say I think Gaspar Noé is a bell end. And I don't want to feel one way or another about a film like that. So basically, I think about 30 minutes, 45 minutes in, I had pretty much completely shut off, and I just watched the rest of it passively and thought, right, okay.
This is just something that's there.
Yeah, I would say you've made your point, now move on, but I would just actually say just move on, because you've not made a point. But I'm not going to get angry about it, because I don't want to give him the satisfaction of being wound up. So, but otherwise, I have to say, I haven't. But then year on year, I seem to visit the cinema less. I haven't tripped over anything particularly unpleasant.
Yeah, I would mention it's been a particularly bad year for Angelina Jolie, who's been in not one but two execrable pieces of cinema, in Salt and The Tourist.
I didn't mind Salt. It was entertaining for 5 minutes, then it got really silly, but again, the critical faculties in my brain just shut down and I went, oh, okay. I wasn't doing anything.
I can never shut those off in my head, so I was basically for the entire film going, that's dumb. That's dumb.
Certain facets of my mental capacity are just being replaced by this sort of apathetic safety mechanism that kicks in every now and again.
I envy you, sir. I envy you.
Well, I'm really trying to chill out because I find myself being wound up so much in my sort of working life and stuff that I can't afford to come home, turn on the telly and then be wound up by anything else. So it's a survival mechanism and nothing more. And that's why I find it pretty difficult to loathe anything.
I found Salt really, really stupid.
Yeah, it's stupid.
And I just couldn't be bothered with it. The one obscure thing that no one's seen that I hated nonetheless was Brilliant Love. Mm. The bad film that ensures any film festival's complete. One thing you really, really hate, there is mine. So that was an entertaining rant, if nothing else, in a previous podcast. Human Centipede has no reason to exist and should not be spoken about anymore.
I'd forgotten about that, Jim.
Yeah, Jim, that's a good word and completely inaccurate word to describe it. What else have we got here? Case 39, which apparently was so bad I couldn't even remember what it was until I just looked it up on IMDb there. And yes, that was a stupid film as well, and also a shitty horror. Who'd have thought it?
Unusual, huh?
And Splice, also, more than anything else, a shitty horror that has no real reason to exist and made very little sense and had dreadful performances from Adrian Brody. I don't know what he was thinking. And one other thing that's put on here that I don't really remember exactly why I put it on here, but I've seen it in other people's kind of best of lists, which puzzle me, was Book of Eli.
Oh, Book of Eli is in my absolute, like, god-awful category of 1 or 0 stars. It's terrible. It's got ridiculous religious overtones. It's really dull. There's a ridiculous scene chewing performance from Gary Oldman.
Denzel's not much better.
Oh yeah, this was the one where Denzel was desperately trying to be an action hero, despite being about 40 years too old. So
wasn't he also trying to be Jesus?
A miscasting, yes. Religious overtones, terrible performances, and every 30 seconds, or at least that's what it felt like, there was a ridiculous swooping low camera shot, basically
the hero
shot.
I forgot.
A hero shot.
Yeah. Well, that was, yeah. Book of Eli was dreadful, man. I don't know what people were thinking.
People are. I remind you again of my comment earlier. People are idiots.
That was such a stone dippy statement. Book of Eli was dreadful, man. What were people thinking?
That shit's crazy.
It blew my mind, man. It was just said in a way that wasn't invested with any emotion, really. It was a stone comment.
Well, it's been an awful long time. It came out the 15th of January in the UK, apparently, and it's been a while, and I've largely forgotten most of it, thankfully.
Unfortunately, I have not.
So it came out about the same time as The Road.
And was not a patch on it.
You make your own choice.
Can I throw a few disappointments of the year in?
Yeah.
They're not necessarily dreadful films, but I was hoping for a lot more from both The Lovely Bones.
That's the one I'm looking at right now.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Peter Jackson, you think a very popular novel that you could have done more with that. Yeah, that's disappointing. Mm.
Yeah, I mean, it's not bad. It's an okay film, but I was hoping for something a lot more, and also Iron Man 2. I was hoping, I liked the first Iron Man, I really liked Downey Jr. Iron Man 2 was just there. It's fine. It's a decent action-ish film, but it's all a bit CG and just a bit soulless at the end of the day. It's not bad, but, you know.
Mm. I would look forward to a longer cut of Lovely Bones, because apparently there's a heck of a lot had to hit the cutting room floor, and it could easily have run to something around the 3-hour mark, and what it was desperately missing was a bit of character development.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't mind the 3-hour cut of Lovely Bones.
Yeah, there's a much better film to be had there, and if I found actually that he'd been forced to chop X amount out of it, and that's the reason why it suffered, then I'd be really upset, because yeah, I was quite looking forward to that as well, and I was left a bit disappointed. Anything else upset you, Drew, or disappointed?
Disappointed, perhaps one or two, I think. Cyrus rather disappointed me. Luke Robinson, John C. Reilly, Jonah Hill, bit of improvised comedy, and it just wasn't funny, unfortunately. Jack Bruce in Whitehall, which I knew nothing about really going into, but disappointed because the first perhaps 15 minutes is great. It was quite interesting looking animation. It was really quite funny, and then it just came to a grinding halt.
Yeah.
And it was basically 90 minutes of torture after that. Yeah, those would be my main things. Maybe perhaps My Son, What Have You Done? Werner Herzog film, which I saw not long after having seen Bad Lieutenant. David Lynch produced it too, executive produced it. I thought, oh, this sounds good, and it's just a bit weird and shit.
Yeah, I tried that. I got about, I think, an hour into it before giving up, and not quite getting the gumption to go back to it. It's probably exactly what you'd expect from a film from those two people, but that's actually not a good thing, as it turns out to be.
So, vintage or not vintage then, 2010?
I think if it's a year that has Inception, Toy Story 3, Four Lions and The Social Network in it, it's got to be vintage.
It can be forgiven for a lot of wrongs.
Oh, yes, yeah, certainly.
And if you were going to have to, if you had to second guess where the awards are going to go in a month's time, then what would you put your money on?
Social Network, probably, actually. I think Social Network's going to get a lot.
I would guess Social Network.
Social Network
will
get kind of best films. Inception will probably get like a best effects Oscar or something like that.
It'll win all the technical stuff.
If either of those gets it for the first time in ages, it'll probably be deserved.
Yeah.
Well, it will be deserved.
And if Enter the Void picks up an Oscar, even just a technical one, Scott, what are you going to do?
We riot.
The streets become ours.
Yes.
Gaspar Noé is going to be locked in a flaming Land Rover. On that note, assuming you have put up with us for the last 12 months, then thanks very much.
Is that the life of the podcast? I know what's going on a bit.
That's it. We look forward to servicing you, who are a matron, for another 12 months. Hopefully you'll keep joining us. Remember, if you want to get in touch, it's podcast@theoneliner.com. Dear friends, I've been Craig. Drew was Drew.
Goodbye.
Scott was Scott.
See ya.
I'm off to my kit.
Bye! Bye.